hello, and welcome once again to the Friday edition of American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHBC. I'm your host, Tim Ryan, my lovely wife, co-host, Heidi Morales-Ryan, with me at my side, as always, while we do this. Of course, on Fridays, you know, Heidi, we've been doing this series called Transistor Days. We started this about a half a year ago. This is show number 26.
Wow.
Right?
I can't believe it.
How time flies. Now, we started like back in 1955. The idea is to basically move on up to the end of the 60s when most pop music was heard on transistor radios. And last week was like a signpost show, show number 25, because that's the show that introduced the Beatles breaking through here in the United States. So from this point forward, things start to change very quickly. And in so many different directions. Now, after the Beatles broke through in America, it kind of felt as though the pop charts moved from black and white to Technicolor. Suddenly, pop songs, they just seemed so much more vivid and colorful. There was energy and diversity. There was definitely diversity on the charts before the Beatles, but now the rock and roll energy is beginning to come back into a lot of the material. Now, with the Beatles, obviously, coming across the Atlantic here in America, Motown was leading the charge on the American side of the Atlantic. While the British invasion started to attack our shores, all of a sudden, AM pop radio became essential listening. Suddenly, music seemed to develop a pre-Beatle, Beatle and post-Beatle scenario. And a lot of great artists got lost in the transition. But for the younger generation, pop music once again seemed glorious.
Yay.
Now, one thing that the Beatles did was they brought attention to the idea of a group, a self-contained group. And there weren't very many here in America that could fit that description. Most groups meant vocal groups, and they had material provided for them and producers and songwriters.
Right.
One quite obvious exception were the Beach Boys. The Beach Boys were a self-contained group. They did write their own material. And Brian, at this point in time, was even handling a lot of his own production. So they were an excellent example of the American version of what a group could be. And while the Beatles were beating up the charts, the Beach Boys were doing their best to hold on, and they were doing quite well. This song from early 1964, written by both Brian and Mike Love, a song that more or less defines the California myth of the girl in the cool car hot-rodding around in her daddy's Ford Thunderbird. You know the song. It's called Fun, Fun, Fun on American Radio, 90.3 WHBC.
Shouldn't
days are short and the nights are long. But they won't, and I won't. They twist, and I'll twist. They shimmy, and I'll shimmy. They fly, and I'll fly. Well, they're out there having fun in that warm California sun. Well, I'm going out west, out on the coast, where the California girls are really the most. Where they walk, and I walk. They twist, and I twist. They shimmy, and I shimmy. They fly, and I fly. Well, they're out there having fun in that warm California sun. Frisky in old Frisco, a pretty little chick wherever you go. And they walk, and I walk. They twist, and I'll twist. They shimmy, and I'll shimmy. They'll fly, and I'll fly. Well, they're out there having fun in that warm California sun. Yeah, they're out there having fun.
Put a couple of them back to back there for pretty obvious reasons, right? I mean, good representatives of the California.
You had a good theme going.
Yes. Well, it's just the way that it happened chronologically. Both of these songs are from February 1964. That last track, California Sun, is credited as being the first, or the, I should say the last American rock and roll hit before the British invasion.
Huh.
It's by a group called the Rivieras. And they didn't do the original version. That song actually debuted with a version by R&B singer Joe Jones. Had a minor hit with it back in 1961. The Rivieras covered it, put it on the B-side of their next single. And you know the story with this thing.
Someone flipped over the record.
Yep, exactly the story. And and the B-side basically took off for good reason. I mean, that's such an infectious song. The Rivieras with California Sun. Okay, so that's the American side of thing. Who do you think was the first artist to follow the Beatles? Who's the first artist to come across after the Beatles struck gold in America?
The Who?
Wow, not even close. Not even close. I mean, the Who were like really late to the game as far as having hits in America. For the longest time, I would have given credit to Dave Clark Five, and I would have been close, but they were actually number two. The first artist to come over to America in the wake of the Beatles was Dusty Springfield.
Ah!
Before the invasion of 64, British artists were really very rarely seen on the American charts. She was an exception, though. A group called the Springfields had a hit with Silver Threads and Golden Needles back in September of 1962. Mary O'Brien, when she went to start her solo career, took the name of her band as her surname. So that's how Mary O'Brien, became Dusty Springfield. She had this singing voice and a style that fit right in with her American counterparts, though.
True.
She never oversang. She sounded like she enjoyed every second of what she was doing. She became famous in her native England as the host of the TV series Ready, Steady, Go. And this was her first big hit here in America from February 1964. Dusty Springfield performing I Only Want to Be With You on American Radio, 90.3 WHPC. I suppose you could think of Dusty Springfield as sort of like part of like a Lewis and Clark expedition for heading west across the Atlantic. I mean, she did it a full more than a year before the Beatles did. It was September 62 when she charted here with her band, the Springfields. And now following the Beatles, she comes back as a solo artist. So something's happening. Something is definitely happening from England. Now, meanwhile, I had mentioned that there were American artists that ended up getting slighted by this sudden shift. And it really, it was almost like the earth moved. But for some people, I mean, all the jazz artists in America who were enjoying a little bit of attention and maybe some even pop attention were suddenly finding themselves pushed aside by this monstrous act called the Beatles. One of the artists who I would say did suffer from that is a woman by the name of Gloria Lynn. She's one of these singers who came up in New York City, played an amateur night at the Apollo Theater, straddled that line between pop and jazz. And now she's thoroughly slighted by history. This song is gorgeous. Probably would have been a bigger hit were it not for the British invasion. But this went to number 28 in February 1964. Gloria Lynn performing I Wish You Love on American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHBC.
Goodbye. No use leading without you. This is where our story ends. Never lovers, ever friends. Goodbye, let our hearts call it a day. But before you walk away, I sincerely want to say I wish you bluebirds in the spring to give your heart a song to sing and then a kiss. But more than this, I wish you love. And in July, a lemonade to cool you in some leaf. I wish you health and more than wealth. I wish you love. My breaking heart and I agree that you and I could never be. So with my best, my very best, I set you free. I wish you shelter from the storm, a cozy fire to keep you warm. But most of all, when snowflakes fall, I wish you love. You free. I wish you shelter from the storm, a cozy fire to keep you warm. But most of all, when snowflakes fall, I wish you.
almost six decades later, and that song still has a punch. It's amazing. Back-to-back hits by the Beatles, one at number one and the other one at number two. That last song that we just heard, Twist and Shout, we played the hit version of it that dates back to 62 by the Isley Brothers with Ronald Isley singing lead. And you definitely hear John trying to do his best to get that soulful punch into his voice that Ron Isley had. I don't know if maybe some people know the story, but that song was actually just an album track from their very first album in England when it was recorded. And they went in and they did this 13-hour marathon session. They recorded the entire album in 13 hours. And they knew that they wanted to do a version of Twist and Shout, but they had to save it for the very end because they knew that it would turn Lennon's voice into shards. It would tear it up. He had a bad cold that day too, so he had one chance to do it. There was only 15 minutes of recording time left, and they did it in one take. Lennon said that he said he felt ashamed by his version of the song because he said, I knew I could sing it better than that, but it doesn't bother me anymore. I was just a frantic guy doing his best. Released here in America, yet another label besides Swan and VJ and Capitol. This came out on Tolly Records, which I believe is an offspin of VJ. So because the Beatles' early material was not accepted by Capitol Records, it was the smaller labels that picked it up, and they were now all cashing in. So everybody was releasing Beatles singles at the exact same time. And the result was this. On April 4th, 1964, a glance of the top five songs on that date, according to Billboard. At number one, Can't Buy Me Love, this the brand new Beatles single. At number two, Twist and Shout, which we just heard on Tolly Records. Number three, She Loves You, which was on Swan. Number four, I Want to Hold Your Hand on Capitol. And number five, Please Please Me.
Wow.
All five positions on the singles chart belong to the Beatles. They had another seven singles on the top 100 at that exact same time.
My goodness.
On the album charts, Meet the Beatles was at number one, and Introducing the Beatles was at number two.
Wow.
These guys were total chart hogs. Unbelievable. That is how the British invasion worked. All right. Now, somebody who was decidedly missing from the scene as the Beatles were hitting was Elvis Presley. And if Elvis wasn't going to do it for himself, then I suppose there was nothing wrong with a guy named Terry Stafford doing it for him. By 1964, Elvis had moved so far away from rock and roll anyway that you'd have to squint to even recognize him. He was a movie star at this point in time. So Stafford was hailed from Amarillo, Texas, and he began to do what Elvis Presley seemed to be taking a hiatus from, recording a legitimately good hit record. Doc Pomus and Mort Shuman composed this song called Suspicion, and it was so well done by Terry Stafford that most people were convinced that it was Elvis. Elvis wasted no time recording his own version of the song as well, but Terry Stafford is the one who had a number three hit with the song Suspicion on American Radio 90.3 WHBC.
Can't buy me love. Cause I don't care too much for money, but money can buy me love. I'll give you all I've got to give if you say you love me too. I may not have a lot to give, but what I got I'll give to you. I don't care too much for money, but money can buy me love. Money can buy me love.
fine. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love. Now buy me love.
Absolutely gorgeous song that came along in the wake of Beatlemania, which probably meant that in its time, it was already sounding a bit old-fashioned.
Yeah.
But based upon its overall quality, I mean, it actually managed to somehow override that. And now, all these years later, it just sounds like a fabulous classic.
Yeah, it does.
Timeless.
Totally.
Even though it was out of time, right?
Totally.
Now, speaking of the Beatles, one advantage that they had over just about any other band here in America was that by breaking more than a year late here, because they were already famous in England for over a year, what that meant was that here in America, it just seemed that the band grew at an exponential rate almost instantly.
Like overnight.
Yeah. 2 years of musical growth were crammed into 2 months. And for Americans, it was more than we could even comprehend. This group of songs by these English guys had this elusive, ungraspable quality that made their songs stand out above everything else on the pop charts.
Everybody's head exploded.
Yeah. They had this like uncanny ability to like imbue these well-crafted and imaginative pop melodies with a sense of honesty and emotion. Underneath the screaming, shaking, hairy heads, I sense a combination of English pathos and a little bit of American blues. And even a child could sense musical growth from Love Me Do to, say, Can't Buy Me Love.
Right.
And this is what was all hitting the charts in January and February. This was no band of one-trick ponies, that was for sure. And Can't Buy Me Love was only their second official release in America. When I say official, I mean the second single released on Capitol Records. This is what followed, I Want to Hold Your Hand. Meanwhile, it was their sixth release in England. Advance orders here in the United States topped 2 million copies when it came out.
Wow.
from March of 1964, The Beatles, with yet another number one hit, Can't Buy Me Love, on American Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
Every time you kiss me, I'm still not certain that you love me. Every time you hold me, I'm still not certain that you care. Though you keep on saying you really, really, really love me. Do you say the same words to someone else when I'm not there?
Suspicion
torments my heart.
Suspicion
keeps us apart.
Suspicion,
why torture me? Every time you call me and tell me we should meet tomorrow, I can't help but think that you're meeting someone else tonight. Why should our romance just keep on causing me such sorrow? Why am I so doubtful whenever you part us up?
Suspicion
torments my heart.
Suspicion
keeps us apart.
Suspicion,
why torture me? Darling, if you love me, I beg you, wait a little longer. Wait until I drive all these foolish fears out of my mind. Why can't our romance just keep on growing stronger? Maybe I'm suspicious cause your love is so hard to find.
Suspicion
torments my heart.
Suspicion
keeps us apart.
Suspicion,
why torture me?
Such a cute song.
Yeah, Terry Stafford. I love that song so much. It's a beautiful track. Now, one thing, another thing I should say that the British invasion and the Beatles managed to accomplish by hitting in America so quickly and so strongly was by pretty much destroying the basis of what our pop music, some of the fundamental pieces of what our pop music was. Before the Beatles hit, folk music was really one of the biggest trends here in America. But it was beginning to fray at the edges anyway. There were those who were taking it seriously, and Bob Dylan is obviously prime among those, who was actually bringing a natural feel to folk music. But there was this whole other camp of quote-unquote folk singers, the college boys in sweaters, rich college boys who would sing about the plight of the poor, and it was just kind of ridiculous and hard to believe. And with that, when a movement that didn't even take the idea of folk very seriously, and they'd be more than happy to just sing children's songs and things like that. It's time for a great miss, is what I'm telling you, Heidi.
Oh, boy.
There's a group called the Serendipity Singers. They were a 9-member folk group from the University of Colorado. And somehow they managed to stick around right into this century. I mean, they've had new lineups with different group numbers performing as the Serendipity Singers for over 50 years, which absolutely stuns me because their songs are sort of ridiculous. And this is
hokey.
Like really hokey. This is them basically hanging on to that American tradition of folk music at a time when it was quite obvious that they were stale and out of time. On American Radio, 90.3 WHBC, here are the Serendipity Singers with Don't Let the Rain Come Down.
I might drown. Oh yes, my roof's got a hole in it and I might drown.
There was a crooked man and he had a crooked smile. Had a crooked sixpence and he walked a crooked mile. Had a crooked cat and he had a crooked mouse. They all lived together in a crooked little house.
Ah, ah.
Oh no, don't let the rain come down.
Ah.
Oh yes, my roof's got a hole in it and I might drown.
Well, this crooked little man and his crooked little smile took his crooked sixpence and he walked a crooked mile. Bought some crooked nails and a crooked little bat. Tried to fix his roof with a rat-tat-tat-tat-tat.
Ah, ah.
Oh, no, don't let the rain come down. Oh yes, my roof's got a hole in it and I might drown.
Now this crooked little man and his crooked cat and mouse, they all live together in a crooked little house. Has a crooked door with a crooked little latch. Has a crooked roof with a crooked little patch.
Ah,
oh no, don't let the rain come down.
Ah,
my roof's got a hole in it and I might drown. Oh yes, my roof's got a hole in it and I might drown.
Ah, ah.
Oh no, don't let the rain come down.
Ah,
oh no, don't let the rain come down.
Ah,
ah. Oh no, don't let the rain come down. My roof's got a hole in it.
My roof's got a hole in it.
My roof's got a hole in it and I might drown.
Wow.
Kind of painful, right?
It's like the Pat Boone of the Jamaican song.
It has not aged well.
Woo!
The serendipity singers there. All right, let's move on. You know, I want to mention somebody. There's a, we have a listener, Heidi, who contacts me quite a bit. And it seems to me like he's dedicated himself to hearing virtually every show that we've ever recorded on both Wednesdays and Fridays, the series. His name is David Evans, and he's a great guy. He's always contacting me with ideas in his own head about things that we've said and such. And one thing that he's made clear by contacting me is that he's a big fan of alternate versions of songs. So if I play something and he knows something that I thinks that I might not know, he likes to say, "Have you ever heard this?" You know, that sort of thing. So I'm going to dedicate this to you, David. It's the song called the Shoop Shoop Song. I guess most people know it because Cher recorded it in the 90s when she was in some movie or something, and it was a huge hit for her. But the original recording, or I should say the original recording, the original hit recording was by Betty Everett. It's called, you know, it's in his kiss, the Shoop Shoop Song. It's in his kiss. However, and this is the information for you, David, it was originally a single by Mary Clayton. Yeah, the Mary Clayton, the backup singer for the Rolling Stones and everybody else.
Oh, wow.
She recorded the Shoop Shoop Song first, and it was originally rejected by the Shirelles, which is how it ended up going to Mary Clayton. And that was recorded by Jack Nitzsche, had Hal Blaine on drums, and the Blossoms were the chorus. So look it up. It's a cool version. However, it was a Beatles label mate, Betty Everett, on VJ Records, who basically recorded this song. And although she thought that the song was puerile, as she put it, she agreed to record a version of it. And it's a good thing that she did because she had a huge hit with it. To this day, her career is pretty much based on this song. She went on to record Let It Be Me with Jerry Butler. And she's also speaking, again, interesting information, David. Betty Everett's song, You're No Good, was eventually covered by Linda Ronstadt. So there you go. On American Radio 90.3 WHPC, here's Betty Everett with the Shoop Shoop Song.
Does he love me? I want to know. How can I tell if he loves me so?
Is it in his eyes?
Oh, no.
Betty Everett singing It's in His Kiss, although for some reason they titled that the Shoop Shoop song after the backing vocals that they added in there. All right, okay, we keep bringing up the effect that the Beatles had, but it's impossible not to at this point in time. I mean, they opened up a sluice across the Atlantic wide enough to fit a small country, and that's pretty much what happened next. Before you could say, yeah, 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 dozens of English bands had washed up on the shores of the United States and infiltrated and then inundated our pop charts. One of the first and the best was the Dave Clark Five, and it was with the single Glad All Over that they debuted here in America. Everybody in the band were musicians. Dave Clark Five wasn't. He just decided that he wanted to manage a band, and then he wanted to be in the band that he managed. So he just really quickly learned to play drums. And he had his real primitive way of playing, which could have been like a way to hold them back, but it was sort of the exact opposite. Because he pounded so relentlessly, he gave the band an immense amount of power and drive. They rolled through the song with enough power and volume to scare the heck out of anybody over 30, which is really exactly the point of rock and roll music, isn't it? On American Radio 90.3 WHBC, here is the Dave Clark Five with Glad All Over. English style, right
there.
Yeah,
those drums are like a rocket taking off.
Bam, 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 bam.
Hammer it out.
Incredible.
It's hammer time.
All right, now let's come back to America now. What's going on here? It wasn't exactly like America didn't have its own incredible ideas for what to do on the pop charts, especially if you were talking about Motor City.
Uh-huh.
Judging from Motown's roster, it seems as if maybe every black kid who grew up around Detroit in the late 50s was musically talented. Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, Marvin Gaye, Mary Wells, the Marvelettes, Martha and the Vandellas all contributed to the cottage industry that became Motown. When Motown founder Berry Gordy Jr. offered Otis William and the Distance an audition for his label after hearing them perform live, He was simply delving into the wellspring of local talent.
Incredible.
Like so many others, the distance were looking for a ticket out of a life working in a local car factory, and music was the most hopeful and glamorous alternative.
Cool.
It's a funny story now. It's a little long, but I may as well tell it because it cracks me up. Otis Williams had the image of a tough guy. Huh. Back then, he would wear leather jackets, oh, have his hair, you know, processed and pulled back. And when he was putting his band together, he needed a bass singer. And he saw the guy that he wanted walking down the street, Melvin Franklin. And he went to approach him. Melvin was terrified of Otis Williams. So when he saw Otis Williams walking toward him, he quick crossed the street and went the other direction. Because I don't want to, he thought he was coming to rough him up. Yeah. He's calling after him and he's yelling his name. And he's like, no way am I going to see that. Eventually, Otis catches up with him and says, what are you doing, man? I just want you to sing with my group. Well, that's going on. There's another band called The Primes that were playing around Detroit. And the members in The Primes were Eddie Kendricks, Paul Williams, and a guy named Kel Osborne. But they were all doing well, but managerial problems soon splintered the group. And they were whittled down to just three members just before they were due to audition at Motown. Accepting an invitation from Otis Williams, Eddie Kendricks and Paul Williams decided to jump ship from their group, and they signed on to assist Otis Williams in the Distance for their tryout. So we've got three Distance combined with two Primes, and together they passed the audition.
Huh.
All that they needed was a new name. So the Temptations sounded about as good as anything else. The band's first releases were cut back in 1961 on Gordy's first, one of his earlier labels called Miracle Records, which had the slogan, if it's a hit, it's a miracle. And ironically, that was really prophetic because nothing that went out on Miracle Records ever became a hit.
Oh, no.
And the Temptations sort of became like Motown's loser group. They just couldn't get anything together. It got to the point where there were Gordy and Smokey Robinson had a bet to see who would be the one to finally break this group. Meanwhile, the tensions in the band were developing again. And, you know, Bryant had become increasingly difficult. At one point, he even assaulted Paul Williams with a beer bottle while they were backstage. At this point in time, the Ruffin brothers, Jimmy and David, both talented singers who wanted to join the Temptations. So at one performance, David Ruffin spontaneously jumps on stage while the band is doing an encore. And the audience went into a total frenzy. So now David Ruffin becomes the band's newest member overnight, and the classic lineup of the Temptations is finally complete.
Wow.
Around the same time, Smokey Robinson wins the bet by writing a perfect Smokey Robinson-style song for the Temptations to sing. As is typical of Robinson, the lyrics are a string of metaphors. He compares his girlfriend to a broom, a handle, a cool crook, a school book, even some perfume. They gave the song to Eddie Kendricks for lead vocals because he has a light tenor that was very similar in quality to Smokey Robinson's voice. And the Temptations just missed the top 10, stopping at number 11 with a song that is now as classic as anything we've ever heard out of Motown. The Way You Do the Things You Do on American Radio 90.3 WHPC.
Do the things you do, the way you do, oh baby, the way you do. baby, you're so smart. You know you could have been a school book. Well, you could have been anything that you wanted to. And I can tell the way you do the things you do.
The way you do the
oh,
things
baby.
You do.
What is a pinza?
Needles and pinza.
You know, while I'm dedicating songs to David Evans, I could send that out to him too, because that song was originally recorded by Jackie DeShannon, an American minor hit for her. But of course, that's The Searchers, a British group, doing a song that was written by Jack Nitzsche and Sonny Bono, believe it or not, wrote that. That was The Searchers with Needles and Pins. All right, I've got time for one more. And I still can't believe that this song actually reached a pop music audience, especially in the middle of Beatlemania. By my own admission, the top 40 is all too often a haven for the trite and the trendy. So to see an artist as authentic and talented, and unfortunately as overlooked, as Bobby Blue Bland on the popular music charts is enough to warm the heart and restore faith in mankind. Went to number 20. After debuting in March of 1964. So we'll leave you with Bobby Blue Bland performing this incredible version of a fabulous song called Ain't Nothing You Can Do on American Radio 90.3 WHBC. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
When you got a headache powder soothes the pain. When you try to rest, Lord, you feel all right again.
When you got a backache, a little rubbing will see you through. But when you got a heartache, there ain't nothing you can do. A man can't break a stone, so he tries another lick. An iceman can't cut his ice, no, Lord, so he buys another pick. Electric lights go out, but a candlelight will see you through. But when you got a heartache, there ain't nothing you can do. There ain't nothing you can do. I said there ain't nothing you can do. When you got a heartache, there ain't nothing you can do. When you meet a friend, you smile because you're glad. When a friend deceives you, it makes you feel so bad. When you lose your loved one, it makes you feel so blue. And then you got a heartache, and there ain't nothing you can do.